come closer so everybody can hear. Brooklyn Abayim, good luck to everybody. As the summer approaches, the Kehila realized the need to give everybody the opportunity to ask the questions that they may have in regard to travel. Pasuk says, Zayis Atarah Ki Adam Yomas Ba'Oyel. Everybody knows all the Mashkichim speak about Mishamemis Asamei V'Teira. So the question begs on the Pasuk, Zayis Atarah Ki Adam Yomas Bevis Medrash. What's the oil? Why would you refer to oil? The Teretz that I was thinking is that an oil is something that's alright, we're on the move. Yidden are always on the move. We're moving, we're traveling, we're doing things. We travel back and forth from Eretz Yisrael daily, weekends. And because of that, it's mechayev us. But there's a Torah that's mechayev us. And the Torah tells us how to travel. And if we follow that which way the Torah tells us to travel, we'll have a better time when we travel. Baruch Hashem, the Kehila realized the opportunity before Ben Hazman, before people leave, he asked the opportunity to give us to ask questions and get clear answers from the Rav and from Zalman Kren, who's a bucking in the Metzias seemingly, on what's going on in the Kashrus field. The first appreciation is to the Rav and Rav Zalman for coming out tonight, spending the time for us. But a bigger appreciation goes to the Olam for coming out late on Matzah Shabbos. And from what I understood, a great outpouring of questions came in, which gives a big chizuk to the Rav that people are interested in shkaging and they want to know and they want to grow. And Rav Hashem, we're going to continue on that chizuk from the Olam that they show an interest. This is hopefully going to be the first on many shiurim, whether it be on this topic or other topics, because of the interest showed by the oil. The Rav would like to say a couple of words of Dibur Bracha, then we'll start with the questions. We hope to have everybody out sooner than later.
As you all know, as Azi mentioned, that we're on the road. The Nesiyin is on the road. As it begins by Avraham Avinu, Lech Lecha, already those Nesiyonis going on the road. The Nesiyonis that we have on the road are Baruch Hashem healthy and good Nesiyonis. And gathering here tonight is, tonight's topic, it may not be down to the exact restaurant which you can eat in. As I know many, from the questions, many people wanted that, like, just like that clear yes or no. But tonight's topic is when we are in places where there is no top kashrus or any kashrus over there, how do we deal with it? Are there things that we could just walk into a store and buy? Can we just walk into a restaurant, trust the man behind the desk and tell us that this is kosher and this may not be kosher or that everything is kosher? And different shaylas being in a place where there's no kashrus, can we warm our food up in the oven? Can we warm our food up in the microwave that's in the room? Can we use the hot water urn? And questions like that. That is the goal of tonight. And if there's time afterwards, which there will be, so then we'll be able to take more prosthetical questions. A good tvach. Okay.
Klal Yisrael survives on bread. That's what we eat. We buy every suda, we have to wash, and we have to eat. Problem is when you're traveling, sometimes you brought enough bread, you made too many peanut butter sandwiches, you had deli sandwiches, you run out of bread. You may be in America, or you may be in Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael creates more problems because it needs to be on Rosh Hashanah. But in America, I don't know if you run into that problem as much. But you're out in Yehovitzville, and you go into the local grocery, whatever it's called, and you see a loaf of bread there. The shaila is, what is the gedersh I should be looking for when I run out of bread? Or I didn't even run out of bread. I did not bring bread because I want it to be fresh. How do I go about eating when on the road?
As we know, Kil al lechem levade yichye adam. It's not the only thing. Chazal asid pitam, shmanam, and bishalakum. Shmanam was taken away afterwards by Bezna Rebbe. Pas palter, we know that there's such a concept as pas palter. How that works exactly is a little bit more of a interesting reality, especially in the 21st century. A few weeks ago, actually, I was in France, and a Rav in a very small area asked me to come look at a small bakery. to help advise them if there was a way how to be matir the bread there. Now, in France, up until recently, it was ungenommen, it was accepted by almost everybody that the French baguette is kosher without any chash. It's not pas Yisrael, but it's kosher. Because by law, you could only use four ingredients in it, and therefore everything was fine. Whether it was really four ingredients or not is andash kasha. But that was what the reality was. Supposedly something changed because of the EU and France. I don't know exactly all the details of that. So there were people in this rabbi's community that were buying these baguettes for many years. And I walk in there. So he tells me in advance that they have some breads that have mamish tarfus in it, pork and cheese and all these different things. The end result, I'm not going to go through all the details, the end result that I told him is that, you know, b'di'eved, maybe b'di'eved, sh'b'di'eved, I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't recommend anybody buying this bread. They're making trafe stuff sometimes at the same time, even though officially they aren't, but they are. We saw it with our own eyes. There's kalim that is shared across one another. They could have taken out literally trafe products, put them on racks, boiling hot, and 2 seconds later did the same thing with kosher baguettes, or supposedly kosher baguettes. Now, again, b'di'eved, could I give a whole list of a teirim why maybe it should be still kosher b'di'eved? Maybe. I don't think anybody wants to eat things that way. So it's very hard. The only reason I'm using this as an example is it's very hard to give a blanket answer on what breads are not good. One thing that on this question that somebody wrote here about this bread, it says, if baker claims all ingredients is kosher. So I'll just make a comment about that part in particular. Somebody claiming something means absolutely nothing. Rabbi Fishbein, I believe, in the CSC in Chicago, wrote a very good article. I recommend anybody reading it if you've never read it before, called Everyone Eats It Kosher. EEI Kosher. Everyone eats it. It's the new Heksher. It must be good, because I saw Pliny Almaini eating it. That means absolutely nothing. Just the fact that the owner tells you, I'm only using these three, four ingredients. And I only bake bread only in the mornings, and only on a Tuesday. So it's Ein Ben Yomai. And he starts giving you all these different reasons why it should be fine. It never is exactly like they say it is, until you go in behind the counter and you actually see what's going on. If it's a place where you know what's going on, then you know what's going on. Then it's a different question. If you don't know what's going on, you're just going based on assumptions, based on people telling you things, I don't think that there's much room to be mad to that, and I don't think that that's what Chazal were talking about. I was looking a little bit before the Shia tonight, I was looking at the Simanim to talk about these things, and the Lashonis that keep on being used by all the Achreinim is that Shuyodeya, that he knows, and that he knows, and that he knows. There's not one place where it says, where I assume, right? There's not one place that I saw that it says that that people say that this is what's in it. They knew. There are places where it does say that. Incidentally, it's very funny. By Pesach, right, which things are much, much worse, there are a lot of things that people did use or did not use. The most simple example is honey, right? Mechaber says, often it's a straight-up Mechaber says, we're not machzik isra on honey. Ramah says right away that we are, right? But Mechaber says we're not, because they knew that there is some type of a probability that there's flour that's being blended in for as a filler, for whatever reason it was being used, and therefore they were chayshish for that.
Ramam is saying that there's an idea, we definitely hear the reasons why it's not recommended to do it, and there are a multitude of chayshish that could go in, especially where you're talking about in France. But a big seaver is from America, and in America there's FDA rules, and there are things that can't go in there, and they can't pull up a small town bakery. You walk into a Walmart, a Great Value, or any of these places, it's a big brand under maybe some sort of hashgacha, and you're not giving us any room whatsoever. You're just saying it's not recommended.
We're talking about things that are not certified.
If
you're talking, we'll use America as an example. Let's finish Europe for a second. In Europe, almost every community has something called a kosher list. There are lists that are available. If you, before you travel anywhere, you should prepare beforehand. There's two websites that I can mention in a second, but every community has a different website. There's one generic website called isitkosher.com or .eu or something like that, which is a conglomerate of all the various different kosher lists that this person in Estonia was able to put together. I can't say it's 1,000,000% updated, but they do have lists that are all combined into one big list. But again, if you're going to a specific area, it's highly recommended touch base with the local community and get their updated list so that you do know what things have been vetted. One second, that have been vetted by that community. Now, vetted at what level? At what things? Again, it's a very, very specific question, and there is no blanket rule. There is no blanket answer to that. There's no way to give a generic answer to that. In North America, where things are certified almost everywhere, there should be at least kosher bread available in every single state wherever you go. There's a big company called Bimbo Bread, based in Mexico. They have 54 bakeries, I think, in North America, in the U.S. or maybe it's North America. I don't remember. They have three or four breads that should be sold as kosher every single place in the United States, meaning they made certain products kosher in all of their bakeries. That doesn't mean that everything that's coming out of that bakery is kosher, but those three, four products are. They're not pas yisrael, they're pas palter, but all the ingredients are kosher. Unless you want to follow up on it.
Just a quick question to add on to the bread. On every single bread is butter. Is there a problem with butter all across?
Yes, butter is a very interesting point. I happen to have been by a very large butter facility last week. It used to be, up until a few years ago, people considered butter to be kosher, even for people that are makbid Chol Yisrael. Butter, many people were noyeg kishitas agayinim, and they were makel on butter. Not everybody, but most people were noyeg heter on butter, even if they were makbid Chol Yisrael. Already 100 years ago or so, the Achrayinim started writing that butter might be a problem because they could be blending in other things into it more as a margarine. Today, with not Ramosha's heter, but with government regulation on what butter, what's defined as butter, they can't really blend other things in. However, butter comes from cream. Okay? Butter comes from cream. Cream can be obtained from one of two sources, either directly from milk, skimming the cream off the milk. The other source can be cream coming off of whey. Whey is the water that's left over for making cheese. If the cheese is treif, generally the whey will be treif, and generally the butter will be treif. Right? It usually follows when a kol yetz min achat min atomei tomei, kol yetz min atar atar. That's usually the way it works. So if you have treif cheese, the whey will be treif, the butter will be treif. So a few years ago, I don't remember the exact timeline, somewhere around 10, most kosher agencies in the United States stopped accepting butter as a blanket. Group 1 is what the terminology in the kosher industry, something that's acceptable without hashgacha, because they started realizing that there's a problem with whey cream. In Europe, most people did not wake up to this reality yet. That being said, I don't think it's such a prevalent problem like people make it out to be. So I was in a very large butter plant. They do use some whey cream in this facility. It only goes into one particular type of product, which is not regular butter. It could end up in regular butter. Could. I saw 2 weeks of delivery records in this facility, and they only had one delivery of whey cream. So, I don't know. It's probably less than 10% of the time probability of it being there. And then you have to start getting to, is the whey really treif or not? So you get into all these other questions. Again, at the end of the day, the minhag ha'olam in America, the kosher world in America, is not to accept butter without hashgacha on it. Somebody wants to be mekel, they can be made. Yesh al ma'al ismaich. It's much easier, though, if you don't want to have any of these problems, simply buy cream and churn your own butter. It's a fun activity for your kids when you're on the trip. I assume most people here have some children, you take cream, you put it in a bottle, you make sure it's not full 100%, shake it up a little bit, you separate butter. It's a lot of fun.
All right. Moving on. A question that was sent in by a big part of the Tzibur was obviously what to do about Chol Stam, Chol of Akum. Can I? Should I? Shouldn't I? I'm makbid the whole year. I'm makbid only when I'm in a kihila. I'm makbid during the Zman. I'm not makbid in a Zmanim. So a lot of that comes on to each and their personal. But before we get to the milk, we like to get to the coffee because people put the milk in the coffee. So a big question that comes up at least 3-4 times, as you can see.
Yes, coffee.
Milk, coffee, and of course, what on everybody's mind is Starbucks coffee on a plane, iced coffee,
and so on. What is the deal? How do we go about it? The people who need their coffee in the morning, for me personally, it's if I'm in Italy, I'll put it this way. If I'm in Italy and I wake up, Italy is the capital of coffee, can I walk into a Clare Trefa restaurant and order myself a Doppio or an espresso with Dino Chashashas? That's for Europe. And for America, I just want to go through a drive-through when I'm driving through Kansas and there's a Starbucks or a Dunkin' Donuts. Or better yet, just to make it more complicated, there's a McDonald's.
Yes. So McDonald's, I don't have the answer. We'll start with North America. We'll start. It's much easier. I don't get any dividends, not from Starbucks or from Dunkin' Donuts, but Dunkin' Donuts is for sure preferable mitzad halacha for a simple reason. At least last time I checked on this, Dunkin' Donuts, as a liability insurance issue, make sure that the water in their washing system, in their dishwashing, the sinks and everything, is below Yad Tzeledes. It's less than 110 degrees. Almost the Kula Alma that's below Yad Tzeledes. And as a result, any of the equipment that would be washed together with the same equipment that they make ham sandwiches would not become treif.
We could assume that they adhere to that law.
They can't change it. It's built into their piping systems. You know, yes, could somebody go and tinker with the gas heater and change the thermometer? Yeah, they could do that, maybe. But you don't have to be chashish for that, for sure not. And again, they have their own reasons why it's a franchise requirement built into the... And it was built into the contract, but if you go, you can go to Dunkin' Donuts, ask them for their washing chart if you want, and I'm pretty certain it says it on there. Starbucks doesn't have that problem. Starbucks really depends on what type of store you're in. There are some stores that they're just coffee stores. They don't have really anything else. They might serve some prepared food, but they don't actually cook anything on premises. There are other stores where it's a full-fledged restaurant. So when you're dealing with a full-fledged restaurant, There's a shtickle problem, at least, that the kelim are probably not a ein ben yomai. They probably have been used recently, and they're all being washed together with all the things that were treif, and they're sitting in dirty water with the
soap doesn't
tarfus. The soap doesn't always help. It depends on what it is. So again, if you want to look for different etayim, how to be mitzaref, seeing as how maybe it's possible, it's possible. It's for sure. From most places I've spoken to in America, the general consensus, I believe, amongst most Paiskim is not to rely on these Ethereum as a regular basis, meaning people that in their own city, when they live in New York, they live in Chicago, they live in Boston, in Miami, wherever they're living, don't go to your local Starbucks to buy a coffee every day in the morning because If they make sandwiches there. If it's a regular Starbucks, that's a problem in your regular place. When you're traveling, again, yesh amal lismach at some point those yesh amal lismach becomes a little too hard to see. When you walk in and you saw that they just finished doing something right there on the spot, and
to the black coffee, you're not referring to the
even the black coffee. Even the black coffee. Everything else gets much more complicated because there you're dealing with flavors and other things. And you get your question about the milk, which relates to the same thing.
I agree that there is room to be lenient with the coffees with this washing problem. If you look through the articles that were written, you'll see even they allude to the coolers that there may be. Therefore, of course, one wants to go with the most lechatchila, so then
louder,
correct.
Louder.
If one wants to go with the most lechatchila, it is correct that instead of walking into the Starbucks, you go down the block and get a coffee somewhere else. However, after going through the sugya, there is room to be maker for those that feel the need all the time.
I will add that on a plane, things are very, very different. Generally on a plane, your kelim are always going to be an ein ben yomai at that point. It's almost impossible for the equipment from a plane when it's deplaned and they're switching over from one thing to the next for the equipment to be used within the same day. Hotels generally are the same thing. It's also generally the same equipment not be used. Hotels have coffee machines in them. They'll tell you that they have a dedicated coffee station where the coffee machines are made and they'll dedicated equipment for washing them. However, anybody that's involved in kashrus that have been certifying events in a treif hotel will tell you that they've always seen them wash other equipment in that same space for the coffee. They want to make sure that things don't get mixed up. So if they have things, most common example is omelet stations. all the equipment from the ambulance stations in a Treif hotel is being washed in the coffee area because they don't want it ending up in the regular hotel inventory.
The coffee it's very common today in hotel rooms. They give you your own personal coffee maker, whether it be Nespresso, Keurig, all these things.
Yes.
They fit in that same category of any ben yoimois that you can rely on them.
Not just that, over there you don't really have a concern of the things being mixed in. We're not choshish for every vita thing that maybe somebody took a schnitzel like the Dira Days book, right, and covered it in tinfoil and put it inside that water to heat up a schnitzel. For sure not goyim that are traveling. They're not doing that. They're going down to the bar and they're ordering food. It's only us crazy yidden that do these type of things. Because you can't go down to the bar. What are you supposed to do? So the general assumption is that you could use them. There are places that will say that you could use mugs inside those rooms because of the same reason, because
glasses,
they're generally...
Glasses or mugs?
Well, glasses are already a different thing. If anything that's used cold, the halacha is that even though normally if you would buy a kli that's used from a guy, you have to kasher it before you use it even cold, right? While you're traveling or in any time that it's a one-off, it's not a regular occurrence, it's not something that you're doing consistently, you can use even kelim that were used hot. You can use it cold without any kashering whatsoever. If you want to use it hot, then you have to get already into your second line of logic, which doesn't make any sense that it was ever really treif mitzad halacha.
An extra question for the Rav. When I'm going away in Eretz Yisrael to Tzimmers, in random places that I rented from different places, and the owner is killing me, and it could be you don't know what happened with their kelim, and usually they give you a full kitchen over there. What could I use in their kitchen? Their mugs, their hot plate, all the different things that are going on in the simmer going away.
Okay, so...
Here I'm talking about the question is different because we're dealing with a yid. So does it change anything what he's using?
So unfortunately, anywhere where there's a chance that they might have used rabbanut, plain rabbanut, so then again, on a l'chatchila dikah form, we treat it like it was used with Isser. That's what we're going to treat on a l'chatchila dikah form. Again, if someone's in a difficult situation, there may be a little more room to move, but we're going to apply those rules. And therefore, those kelim which, like Reb Zalman said, that if it's not, you're not a frequent tzimmer guy or a frequent hotel person who lives in the hotel, so then you have the heter of using their kelim, even the ones that are used sometimes hot, to use them in cold. When it comes to using the hot water urn, so again, is there chashash that maybe someone heated up their rabbanut schnitzel in there or not? Very small chashash, but if someone's worried about it, simple aid to just fill it up first with a hot water, boil it, bring it to a boil, and then empty it out and reboil it again. If a hot plate, just cover it with a foil or what other things are there?
Utensils, mugs, plates.
So that's what I said. Using it cold is not a problem. Using it hot already could be there's an assumption that it's ain't been yom unless it's during that season where people are just coming and going. So then
they hope they have a grill there. A grill set up. Can use the grill that they have.
So if it's a grill, an outside grill where there is a cover to it, so you could kasher it by lighting the fire, cover it, let it burn for 20 minutes, half an hour, and that will kasher it out.
Even for America, if you go to America?
Yeah, awesome. Yeah.
The next question is, we're going to try to move along, is about the milk, the rub to start off about milk.
So those that are semach on the heter of Moshe Feinstein, called stam, so then in general you have the heter, Reb Zalman will fill us in if there are places and countries where you cannot be semach on that there are no laws over there, but in general you have Rav Moshe to be semach on. However, those that are not semach on Rav Moshe, so the question is, when I'm traveling, can I be semach on Rav Moshe? There is room, without getting into the pratma of the sugya, there is room to say that, yeah, at home you are not semach on Rav Moshe, but when you are away, you are semach on Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe's heter itself, there are many paiskim that question if it's if it still applies nowadays, even though Rav Moshe himself addressed those issues in his tshuva. He says he's aware that the fines are very small fines and the FDA doesn't really show up that often. He was Samech on it, so you definitely have on whom to be Samech on. However, again, this is all assuming there's no chash that they're adding anything else to the milk, and it's also assuming that there's some basic laws over there. Somewhat there is something similar to the FDA that we could be Samech on the heter.
This is referring to milk or all milk products?
Just milk.
Not just milk. All the milk just products, milk. The OUD and all that, the milk and your entamin, the Kool-Aid, that all...
That's already more meaning OUD depends on what we're talking about. Let's say entamin, so it's made with powdered milk. That's another sugya. There are those that may not be makel with Rav Moshe Seta, but will be makel with the Hartzvi, this Kanarin, which was makel by powder. Again, those that there is a kula, there is definitely a kula. It's really a personal question to ask. The person has to, if a person is ready to accept the chumrah of not following chol stam or not. I don't think you want a whole share on this right now. Right.
Do you have anything to add on the milk? It has to be quick.
Of course. Yeah. So Rav Moshe's heter is only, like the Rav mentioned before, it's only limited to countries that have FDA, that have an FDA equivalent like regulation and control. Some places do have some kind of regulations, but they're not enforced in any way, shape, or form. The most common example that people like using as an example is Mexico. Rav David Feinstein, I believe, is on the record as saying that his father's heter does not apply to Mexico. Some people still eat chol stam in Mexico. I've been told by the head of the Sephardi Ashgacha there that they actually had information that one of the companies was blending in animal fat to balance out the milk fat content in some of the products for chol stam products. So there is a real problem in places where the mafia or there is no real regulations, even if it is on the record. In general, anywhere in the EU is acceptable, is fine. Anywhere outside of the EU and North America is generally not accepted. Thailand. China, Thailand is not acceptable. Pretty much anywhere that's not North America or the EU, South Africa is, again, something where people do accept it, and Australia, New Zealand. Other than that, not a good thing. I will add just one more thing about this, which relates to the things we were talking about before, bread or other things. And the cautious world is a statement that they say, usually this is what we tell companies when they mess up on something, your lack of planning doesn't make it my problem, right? Your lack of planning doesn't make everything a b'di'evet. So you should be accounting for all these things before you go on a trip somewhere and figuring out what you will be doing and what you have available and how you will kosher it and how will I have milk for my kids? If that fell through, you took milk, the milk spoiled, now what? Okay, so you call the rub up and you get a psak for that time. In general, you should always be planning for what you will be doing and what you will not be doing.
Okay, moving on. We're going to cover a bunch of things now because we're running late and we want to cover as much ground as we can. We're going to move on. We're going to talk about drinks. Very common. All the classic drinks. The joke goes, wherever you'll find Coca-Cola, where you'll find Chabad. Coca-Cola all over the world. One drink. Coca-Cola all over the world. How does it work? Second question. 100% juice drinks. Go to a store and you see them juicing it. They cut up the fruit in front of you. Fresh. They give it to you. And the third and most important is beer.
Okay.
Either one can answer.
Coca-Cola. So Coca-Cola, in North America, obviously it has a Hechsher. It still has a Hechsher. Europe does not have Hechsher. Anywhere else in the world doesn't have Hechsher. There are 23 Coca-Cola syrup plants, I've been told, throughout the globe. I think there's one ingredient that comes only from Atlanta or Ireland or something, but there's 23 facilities that actually make the syrup that then the bottling plants go and bottle. I think there's hundreds of facilities in North America, just for the United States, that actually bottle. North America and Europe supposedly all get the same supply of syrup, and there have been people that are involved in the process on the record that will say that in Europe you can drink Coke. There are also other people that are involved in the record that say that you can't drink Coke in those areas. We're not going to get into names. Sprite supposedly is easier. Supposedly there's no problems with the Sprite virtually anywhere. Though there are some people that have backtracked that a little bit because there's a concern that some of the sugar content is coming from glucose, which is coming from grapes. If it can come from grapes, not always, but sometimes, which would be a problem of Stam Yenom. Coke Zero is the same klal as Coke, meaning all these things, besides Coke and Sprite, the Fantas and all these other flavored stuff from the Coca-Cola company, that is a major problem in anywhere outside of, that doesn't have a hechsher on it, let's put it that way. Coca-Cola and Sprite in North America and in Europe generally is accepted that there aren't any concerns and the syrup is coming from a kosher facility. Outside of those places, there are people that still drink it anyway, and I don't know exactly what they're really relying on, other than the fact that they're assuming that the formula doesn't really change. For Coke, that's probably somewhat true. For Sprite, I don't think so. Again, in China, if you go to most places in China, all the Chabad houses and the other Jewish communities that are not Chabad houses in China now, there are some that exist, Hong Kong in particular, but there are other ones. They do drink Coke and Sprite and whatever.
Russia.
I can't tell you why. Russia, the same thing. I'm telling you, they all, people are drinking it. If they have Omal Ismaich, I cannot, I don't understand it. In North America and in Europe, Yesh Omal
Ismaich. On a plane, on an airplane?
Coke, same question. Same thing. If it's coming from those countries, so there are places where it, like you leave Eretz Yisrael on foreign airlines, most of the time they will not have Israeli Coke on the plane. They'll have European Coke. So it doesn't always, not everything always is just like, I assume I just left this country, it must be from here, it might be Coke from Thailand. That's Coke. With regards to juices, in Europe, most people accept 100% fruit juices without any hashgacha. Bottle juice. I'm not talking even juice in front of you, unless it's grape. If they're juicing in front of you, the only thing that has a chashash of bugs really is orange juice. And on that, Yesh, I'll let the Rav answer that question. But the only thing you really have to be concerned about if you're at a juice bar or place where they're making fresh juice on the spot in front of your eyes, you don't really have to be concerned that something's coming from Eretz Yisrael, even though that there are times that that is possible. And you might have that problem. But you don't have to be concerned for that as itself. If they do have grapes or any type of grape drink there that's there or any other ingredient that they're adding to the juice besides the fruit that they wash out the juicing equipment for you before they juice it. So you just have them run water first one time through, and then that cleans it out. And you don't have any problem with that. The juice itself is fine.
Beer.
Beer is a little complicated. The world is getting very complicated with regards to beer. There's a lot of what's called now craft beer or artisan beer. When I was in Boston, my I don't know even what adjective to use for this. The most disturbing beer experience was seeing a company, I believe it's a company called Gypsy Beer, if I'm not mistaken, but it might be a different one, that goes around to different beer facilities. And now it's trafing up all these other beer facilities, of course, where they had a beer called Pepperoni Pizza Beer. Pshutai kemashmai, they took 12 pepperoni pizzas from Domino and dumped it into the brew tank. It's being filtered out afterwards, right? I mean, who cares? And that was part of the brewing process. So no question that beer is quite trafe. So the consensus among American kosher agencies is that any beer that's coming from a craft brewery or a smaller brewery of any kind usually has a concern that they're doing all kinds of interesting experimentations, and the beer does not have a cheskas kosher. So if you're buying Heineken, you're buying Budweiser, you're buying a large beer company, they generally will never be doing such a thing on the same equipment if they would be doing it at all. But any small things would be different. In Europe, there are countries that are beholden to what's called the Beravian beer laws, and they follow very, very strict four-ingredient-only beer. That being said, there are places that are adjacent, and they make some beers by those rules. They also make other beers that aren't. And then you get back to the same question. So as a general rule, I do not recommend anybody buying beer that's not from a well-known company, or if you're in an area where you know, again, Germany, Belgium, certain countries in Europe where you know that their beer is beer and nothing else. It's probably more pure beer than most of us Americans are used to. The other thing which I will mention with beer, and the Rav might want to address this, is that there are places that hold that you're not allowed to drink beer in a Mokka Mishtoy Shal Nochi, meaning if you go to a bar, you cannot buy a cup of beer and drink it there. If you know Tel Lobby, the same question comes up also. Is that considered that your
airport
house
lounge
or not? So that I'll let the Rav answer that question. But it is something that...
Is the question clear? Well, that what the Rav is going to address now? It's very common that you'll be traveling somewhere and you want to grab a beer, and the person next to you is a guy. You sit and talk with him. You just go buy a beer anywhere and sit there and drink it. There's a problem with that. And also, I'm just going to add to the question about in Eretz Yisrael. There are many craft beers coming up also. Is there something you have to be chayshish for Trumas Maishas on the beers in Eretz Yisrael?
And chadash for those that are chadash. Right, so, I mean, just before I forget, those that are makbir on chadash in Eretz Yisrael or those that are makbir on chadash even out of Eretz Yisrael have to also find that certain countries there could be questions of chadash on the beer. There are certain countries where it's known that their beer is made with wheat that's not issued with chadash. Sitting and drinking in a place which is made for drinking, like in a bar, or even a lounge where if there's a section in the lounge which is there for drinking wine or beer or beverages like that, that is an issue of your day simu kufi dalet. And one should not do so. Even the hetter that there is that sometimes for business meetings, derech arai, b'mikra, the lashonos that are used have to be defined very clearly where those heterim are. But just to sit in one of these places with goyim should not be done. Again, we can have a share on that alone. It's a shem at a different point. But it is something a person has to concerned about.
Israeli beers.
Zalman mentioned the problem in rampant in the world about
craft beers.
Craft beers that have zero hechsher and they're putting in pepperoni pizza.
So my assumption is that the weed is from here. Am I wrong about that?
I think it's all imported usually.
It's all imported?
Usually.
Okay. So then.
General.
So let Reb Zalman answer that question.
Can you?
I mean, you still have the problem of Trumas and Maises, possibly. I mean, I don't know if it relates or not, because it's after, what's it called? I don't know how that works. I really don't. I never dealt with beer in Eretz Yisrael, so I really can't answer that question. I can say that from knowing Israeli companies, if there's anywhere they're doing experimentation, here, no question. They play around with all kinds of interesting things. So there's no guarantee that they're just using four ingredients on that on their breweries.
Okay, we're just going to do the question that was sent down on the email, so everybody will feel that they actually got it. What about cut up fruit? Common question that used to be for single people when they were on a date, a lemon in a Coke. When you go out, you want to eat something real, and your relative wants to eat fruit or vegetable, and they use their knife. Could you go into any store nowadays, they have it prepared watermelon, melons, all in the fridge cut up.
So there's a few different categories of where this applies to. If you're going to a grocery store and you're buying cut-up fruit and vegetables, that's one answer. Generally, most grocery stores will have, at least in the United States, from what I've seen in Europe, it's pretty much the same thing. They'll have a dedicated fruit and vegetable room. Officially, they have dedicated knives, but those knives always get mixed up anyway. But because everything's cold and because they have a dedicated space for it, there's no concern that they cut a ham sandwich 5 minutes before with the same knife that they're going to be cutting up even your lemon, which is a davar harav, a sharp food, which would be the biggest problem.
I agree with that.
when you deal with hotels, it depends again on the size of the hotel. The larger facilities, banquet halls, larger hotels, hospitals, they'll generally have also dedicated, and hospitals are much more efficient about this. But they'll have dedicated areas and a process. The cold stuff, the raw ingredients will never get mixed in with cooked products. It's very, very well organized in these ways. Again, generally, there's no 100%, and the same rule would apply. There's nothing to be concerned. So if you're staying in a larger hotel and they have a buffet breakfast for free, and you walk in and you want to take fruit, vegetable that was cut up, There's no problem with that. In theory, even with a davar charif, even with onions or lemons, there shouldn't be a problem with those things. When you deal with a smaller place, motels, again, smaller hotels, not motels, not larger ones, there you generally don't have such a separation, and they have very, very small spaces, and they're prepping food in a very, very tight space and time frame, and it is very probable that things will get mixed up and they don't have dedicated equipment. Therefore, I would say davar charif you for sure should not have. For fresh things,
if it's
onions and lemons, pickles.
In my opinion, onions are not davar charif.
Okay.
Pickles not either, so you won't run into the issue there.
Yeah. Yeah, the list is complicated of davar charif. But for fresh fruit, melon. No, it's.
No, there could be. There could be.
The Chazon Ish, I think, says that we don't add davar charif. Right, we don't make them up by yourself.
I just wanted to mention one more point about Trumas and Maestras here in Eretz Yisrael. So there's something which it's not as complicated as people panic about. If one knows that they can end up in these places where they're worried that if Trumas and Maestras was taken, or they know that Trumas and Maestras, you're on a farm, and you know that Trumas and Maestras was not taken off, you went apple picking, cherry picking, or what was the season now, and you want to take off Trumas and Maestras, there's something called Keren Trumas and Maestras, where it's very simple, you call them or go onto their website, you sign up, it's about 40 shekel a year, and once you signed up, you don't have to worry about what's called the Pruta Chamura, which takes care of Maisa Sheni, they also take care of Maisa Ani, and then the rest of the process is simple. You take what you each type of fruit or vegetable that you have, take off a little more than 1%. There's a nusach over there, you can say in Hebrew or English, and they'll send you both, and then wrap it up and throw it away, and then you solved your Trumas and Maestras issues. B'derech klal not, but you can get from them also a list of the few trees that may be issued that year. Again, arla is only by trees, not by vegetables, so vegetables you don't have that issue. Trees, sometimes there may be, but b'derech klal not.
Before we open the floor for a couple minutes for people to ask questions, it's very hard to figure out what the last question should be, because there's so many good questions here.
What about the Chabad house?
It's going to take a long time.
No, it won't go... Yeah.
What? All right, we're going. Okay, this is a general question. It's more for the Rav. There's a lot of, nowadays, of Airbnb, finding houses in random places, random locations, also in Eretz Yisrael. And a lot of these places, we included them hotels, for the first place. We want to know the issues with motion sensors, electronic keys, and most importantly, if you're there with your family, a wife and a child, what about a carriage with an Arab within the hotel on the premises? Can we keep the whole list?
Okay, let's take one at a time.
One at a time.
So let's go into motion sensors. Okay, so motion sensors, you can have security cameras with videos where, again, if it's in your ability to close it or cover it before Shabbos, of course, that's best. If not, then there's room to be lenient. One may be lenient. You have automatic doors in a lot of these places. If it's possible, if it's a place like a hotel where there are goyim over there to wait for a goy to come and walk in together with the goy, or if not, then one could wait by the door, next to the door, for a non-Jew to open the door for him, and then he could even, if he needs to, if there's a need for it, he could even hint by saying, I would like to go through the door. But it should be a hint, which is what we call derech sipur. Like, I would like to go through the door in a story way, rather than saying, not to say to him, I need the door, or can you open the door, or I need the door opened. You could say, I'm not allowed to open the door on the Sabbath, and then that's a hint. Can you help me?
Elevators?
Shabbos elevators. So, what? Why?
Goyish hotel with no elevator. No,
right.
Shabbos elevator.
So then, really, one should not be making with elevators. unless there's a very specific situation. Look, you can work it out. I think in most cases you work out, even if you're on the 22nd floor. I think in most cases you could work out, limit the amount of times you go up and down, come down before Shabbat starts, and you go up. If there's a need for it, so then a specific Shabbat should be asked. Someone's not well, someone's a lady's pregnant, a baby, it'll be hard to get up and down. Can I use a guy to bring the baby up? Different options like that. Here in Eretz Yisrael, there are Shabbos elevators with different hechsherim. When you approach the place before Shabbos, check what the hechsher is, and certain hechsherim one can use for going up and down. There are certain hechsherim which are good for going up and not down, and certain hechsherim which only in specific situations are you allowed to. But it's worth asking beforehand. You have electronic keys, so the best thing, of course, is to work it out, to work out a way that you don't have to use it, or that someone's always inside the room, that you won't have to come out to using the key again. However, otherwise, one may have the guy, by hinting to the guy, or keep things in the room, a few bottles of beer, and then you tell the guy, would you like a bottle of beer? I have it in the room, and he'll go, but you'll tell him about so then he's going into the room to get the bottle of beer, that will also be an Eitza. Again, in case of need, one will be able to do that. It's enough of a need. What was the other question? Erev. So Erev at a Jewish or a non-Jewish hotel, there's no issue to carry within the hotel buildings. And the enclosed ground within the area of the hotel, even though there's no issue without any area.
Okay. One carry there.
In that area, you could. In that area.
If you rent the complex.
In the building or the area which is enclosed in. There's a fence or a wall around. Fence or a wall. If other...
Cool.
Right, cool.
The Rav mentioned...
But I'll help you build it before Shabbat if you want. I've done that.
The Rav mentioned that you could tell a guy to go into your room to get a bottle of beer. Common shayla that's asked about people who go away to hotels and other rooms is that they leave for the day and they plan on having a barbecue at night. And then they have inside their room all their meats, their hot dogs, their schnitzel, all the things that they have in their room. And of course, when they leave, they of course use room service to have them freshen up the room. They could do it. So they have a person come in. Is there a reason to be chayshish for the problem of basish and esalim and ayim?
Okay. So just on the topic of basish and esalim and ayim, so first of all, if one is in and out of the room where the food is being kept, and he's in and out, meaning that he's not leaving for a substantial amount of time, let's call it 20 minutes, so then there's no issue. If there's a seal, if the package is sealed with a tape, and you write on it two letters on the place where the tape meets the package, so you'll be able to, so it'll be recognizable that it was not switched with another item, then also there's no issue in those cases. However, if one did not leave, he left it unsealed, he left the food unsealed and it was accessible to a non-Jew, in many scenarios the food may be eaten, especially we have, let's say, a place with shchichi barabim, or a place where you didn't leave for a long time, like we mentioned, or a place where he doesn't benefit, there's no reason for him to benefit from switching it. You left a small piece of meat for him to go get a non-kosher piece of meat and switch your piece for that piece that should look the same and sell your piece for whatever price he could sell for. It's just not worth it. So in those cases, there'll be room to be made. Where the issue comes more is when you're leaving wine or grape juice in a place where the guy is there or could be there, you're leaving with him, that's a big...
So, okay. Can I ask you?
Yeah.
Next question. we mentioned before about the omelet station, so it got me thinking, what about if I want to make eggs? Could I go out in Europe, in America, wherever I want, and just go into any store and buy an eggs? I never saw a hechsher on eggs.
Maybe you could give us also a list of other things that
so again,
that are grade A products.
So group one. So like I mentioned before, there's two sources that I would recommend using as a general guideline for what products can be used without Hashgacha. One of them is maintained by the CRC in Chicago. Easy website, askcrc.com. The other one is, again, is it kosher? .com.eu, I don't remember exactly what it is. Google it, you'll find it. They both have, the AskCRC doesn't give you a list. You have to actually type in each thing individually. And sometimes there's multiples that don't always fit exactly the same. Is it kosher does have a list of a running list of different items, and you can add, on is it kosher, you can also aggregate it based on different countries. You tell, I want to see only lists for Europe or only for this country, only for this whatever country it is. You'll get that information.
Also,
with regards to what
the website also that people can order meals in Europe.
Order meals in Europe. There's a few different websites in Europe. I don't remember.
I think important also, there are websites there are places you could order meals wherever you are in Europe.
Oh, there is
that.
There's one all over the world.
To you.
There's one all over the world, but you don't know which hashgachas there are.
You don't?
It's complicated. Yeah,
okay.
It's not so simple. I don't think. With regard to eggs in particular, the halacha is that we assume simen peivav and shulchan aruch. Stam eggs, we assume, are chicken eggs, because that's what normal chickens are. I don't know how they knew exactly if they're breckles or not breckles. That I don't know about how they figured that one out. But the assumption is that eggs, if it looks like an egg, and like a normal egg that you're familiar with, then it's fine.
Which means that it's round on one side and a little point down
on
the
other
side.
Side.
Even though in there it's so, you'll see round eggs.
They're actually more point. They're actually, a lot of them are more pointy. And the ones that are more round, they actually say are somewhat problematic here.
Okay.
But that only applies to regular chicken eggs. If you want to have, it'll be a little bit more exotic and get quail eggs or duck eggs or turkey eggs, which again, they're all kosher. Over there, unless you know exactly what you're looking for and how to identify what it is, I don't think that if the guy tells you exactly what the minnes works either. I don't remember off the top of my head, but it could be that if he tells you that this is a duck egg and whatever, then it's fine. Quail eggs is more complicated because there are a few different types of quails, all with the same generic name, and we only have a Masera only on three of them. So it gets a little more complicated.
Regular chicken eggs are not a problem?
Regular chicken eggs anywhere in the world are not a problem. That's
what about olive
what?
Oil?
So again, it depends on some. The only nafkamina for fertilizer, if you find a blood spot, is there reason to be makel? Generally, the velt is makbid on that anyway, and you throw out the whole egg, even though that you really only have to throw the blood, because your wife probably doesn't want to eat it anyway. But the reality is that that's the only difference. Otherwise, it makes no difference.
Okay. We're going to move on to a question that seems to be pressing. I'm not sure who
yes.
this is directed to. Many people travel all over the world. They rely very heavily on Chabad. I don't know if people have the inside scoop about what's going on in their kitchen, in their restaurants, in their stores, wherever they go. They stay by them for Shabbos. They stay by them for restaurants. Do we know their Hashirim? Do we not know their Hashirim? Should we not rely on them? Am I forgetting anything? There are a lot of, we normally don't go with Chabad, but when it comes to traveling, all of a sudden everybody is the biggest chassid. Okay. Let's flip
I'll just mention the mikvah thing quickly. Most mikvah, because it's a, most mikvahs that are built around the globe right now are supported by one or two international ones, Mikvah USA, Mikvah this, Mikvah that, Tahara dot, whatever, and they all insist on the mikvahs meeting all people's standards, meaning they all have a bar ashaka and a bar zviya, in addition to having the Chabad bar al-gabei bar. And now, could be they've done a little bit better, a little bit worse, is a different story. There are mikvahs that are older, meaning any mikvah that was built more than 20 years ago, I would say, throughout the globe, Chabad mikvahs might only be a bar al-gabei bar. I know places that they've said that it's not, and in the end it turned out that the mikvah was only a bar al-gabei bar. Which, again, for some people that's a problem.
Is there a website you could check?
There are different websites that have, mikvah.org, I think, does list which things they have. It's not very accurate.
Uh-huh.
So again, anything that was built in the last 15, 20 years or so, as far as I know, they're almost always supported by one of these three or four worldwide organizations, and those, all those organizations insist on having all shittas being implemented. Also in reverse, meaning if I want to build a mikvah and I only want to have a bar and a bar shaka, right? No, you got to have to bug a bar because some Lubavitchers are going to come through town and they're going to want to use it. So that's regarding the mikvah. So regarding Chabad itself, so I'll just turn the question around a little bit. This has nothing to do with Chabad. It's a problem anywhere. There are no two Chabad houses that are the same. There are 5,000 shluchim around the world, and each one does its own thing. There are some Chabad houses that are more machmir than anybody in this room, probably. There are some Chabad houses that I have no idea what's going on. And they probably have no idea what's going on, right? So it's really not a Chabad issue. The real question is that if you're going somewhere and you don't know what that person's standards are, what's the halacha? Halacha generally says that eidecha nemen b'isurin. You have somebody that's reliable, you know, until there's something that you're concerned about, then you rely on them. So the first question generally is just to ask the few things that bother you. If you're makbid on yashan, ask. They generally are not. If you're makbid about, I don't know what, the different shechitas are different, you want to know where the shechita is coming from, some questions are legit. Those questions are usually the ones that are the least problematic ones. Most people, you know, are not doing their own private shechitas. There are some that exist, but most of them are not doing that. They're centralized. It's not practical in the 21st century to go do your own private shechita for 200 birds every 2 months. For example, most of Eastern Europe, there are two Chabad shechitas that I know of that are run by Rabbi Yaroslavsky here in Eretz Yisrael, and that's where everybody's getting it from. A lot of people in Europe that are even Chabad, they're getting from the Eidus Shechita in Poland, because a lot of people travel to Poland, so it's easy, it's accessible, it's available. I got a list on some group for 1,000 different items that I could buy in Europe for meat, chicken, fish, you name it, the whole thing.
Where can we get that list?
What?
Where can we get that list?
If somebody get my telephone number and I'll send it to you.
You have it? Yeah.
But again, I don't know what volumes they'll send and at what limit. There are grocery stores in Europe that will deliver anywhere. If you're going in Europe, there are
we'll
quite
put
a few.
It on the CNC,
almost anywhere you go in Europe, you can get kosher food, either fresh prepared food, fresh relatively speaking, obviously, or grocery items delivered to your door. It's not that hard in Europe. If you're going to more exotic places, you're doing a safari in Zimbabwe, don't think that you're going to get any food even from South Africa. So again, if you're going to a place where there's a Jewish community or a Chabad house that's in the area and you don't know what their standards are, halacha is eidecha nemen b'isurim. You ask the questions that you do know what to ask. How do they control bishul akum? What are they doing about bug checking? What are they doing about different things? And based on that, you can decide, make an informed decision or report back to the Rav and get a psak on what you can or cannot do.
I basically agree to that. Just when, even though we say Erechana Misurim, when you know the person, or that you know he's a Neman, or that, but then there's a question when you're going to a restaurant or to a store, if we apply that so simply. So again, one has to ask the right questions, and then, like Rav Zalman said, it's depending on what the answers are.
Fully agree with Rav. I was talking about if you're eating at the rabbi's house, at the Chabad house,
right,
at the community center, whatever it is. The second it becomes a restaurant or a factory or a delivery food system or whatever it is, then
it's much
totally
more
different rules. There are Chabad houses that bashgachas harav whatever, but it's the same rabbi. So what bashgachas? I'm eating out of your kitchen, right? So it's not the same thing, obviously.
Anybody have any questions about the Chabad? It seems to be a very big question.
Yeah, stand up. Stand up.
The
fact that Chabad
was
elegant,
they believe that the rabbi had
God-like
thing like Yashkar.
And
that's a lot more than
3%
of people think. We have to be
chayshu to Chabad after those who...
I don't think you have to be
chayshu.
Next question.
I agree.
What other questions?
What
are these questions that we should be asking?
The most common things with what ingredients are they using, right? That's most common.
Yeah, it's here in
Eretz Yisrael. You go to a place that you don't know, even if you know what the Hashgacha is, right? You know, it doesn't always add up to what they say it is. Well, which ingredients are you using? How do you control Bishul Yisrael?
How many hours is the Mashgiach there during the day?
Yeah.
Is he there during the cook? And when he's not there, who's in charge of the Bishul Akko? Hafrashas Chala.
Bug checking.
Do they have a system for that? A system for the bug checking. Well, whatever it concerns you, you should.
I mean, there's a lot of Chavaras. I don't think we're going to go through a list of every single one. If you have a particular question, feel free to get in touch with me, and I'll find out for you if this place is known to be good. Yes, definitely. Without a question. What? No, we have heard problems.
It's not according to Ramah, until you know he's puchsik bekashris, if he's running an establishment, a restaurant, or a store, or a hotel, we're not semech on eidach and emissur. According to Ramah, and according to many shittas, according to everyone nowadays.
Any other questions in the Geirat Chabad?
Join our Shabbos afternoon, Kaila. We just learned that simple. If he's making it to sell, then that's called to sell. If he's making it to give out, that's to give out. That's called giving it. He's not doing it to sell. Everyone gives to expect a taiva back. Yeah.
Breakfast is to get you to come for minyan, so there's a minyan for Shabbos.
Last question, a very common question there at Israel. People go away to different hotels, different places, and the hotel has some sort of hashkafa. Is it okay to call the mashkiach and rely on the mashkiach for certain things that he says with him to find out the products that are okay, to eat certain products, not eat certain products? How should one act when he goes to a hotel with some sort of hashkafa in order for him to eat something from the hotel?
So the
last question.
It's a hard question to really answer, but the validity of a heksher is based on how afraid is the mashkiach or the owners to do something and getting caught. So it really depends on the place. Certain places where
the person's discretion to go talk to mashkiach is wearing a white shirt.
The answer is you won't be able to do it because you don't know. You don't.
Even if I ask the same question that I would ask the Chabad house?
What?
But ask the same question. What about our precious house?
Okay, so then do that. Do that.
And then I could eat?
You could do it. If you get back all the right answers, he knows the answers to answer you. So I have a suggestion. After you get all the answers, ask him if you could go in the kitchen and see if what you see in the kitchen matches with the answers.
I got thrown out of the hotel.
Exactly. That's my point. So you're
not
going to make
reliable.
It. What?
It's not
a question, reliable or not reliable. The question is that he asked you, after he gave you the answers, now you need to see that it matches. And many, many times, you'll see that it doesn't match. And then there'll be excuses why it doesn't match. Is there someone, ask him, is there someone checking over the products when they come in? Okay, again, either you could go in or if you heard that this person, my suggestion with the Chabad house is to find out beforehand from people that know the ones running it, which is not hard to do. At least that's what we do when the yeshiva goes on trip. We find out beforehand from people that are in the inn. They know the people running it. They'll tell you, he is Neman. He puts out telephone every day. He cares about kashrus. He's Ish Neman. And then you could trust his answers to you. Then you could call him.
All of Babich is put on talis and tefillin as we Hasidim say, you know, it's a shot. The Rebbe didn't say that you have to keep tayag mitzvahs because otherwise we'd have to do that too, right? So all the Lubavitch is always put on talis and tefillin because that's one of the 12 of time, right? So you see, I wear shtreimel, so I can make the joke. It's not a problem. The only thing I would differ slightly from what the Rebbe is saying is that you could tell generally if somebody's whitewashing things or not. The biggest problem is your average consumer doesn't know what questions. The Rebbe alluded to this also. Most people just don't know what questions to ask. You walk into a restaurant, you're not gonna think through what applies and what doesn't apply and be able to ask those questions. And that generally is why this doesn't work for the average consumer. But if somebody does spend a little bit of time, which I advise everyone to spend a little bit of time to understand better what it is that they eat. It's a mitzvah in the Torah, v'iskadash t'misim g'doishim. It's a mitzvah to know, l'havdil ben achaya nechalas ben achaya shalei sa'ochel. It's a mitzvah to be able to know these differences, and that's what brings G'dusha. So figure those things out, and only by asking will you get there. And adrabba, asking questions for a mashgiach is the best way to show the establishment and the mashgiach and to give them the empowerment. Many times it's not the hashgacha per se that's not trying to do their job. The establishment just is a machshavit. The more they see people that ask about it, the more people come in and they ask for the mashgiach, they call up the establishment, they can I talk to mashgiach? They'll give you a phone number, he's not here, he has a cell phone number, whatever. And the more they see that happening, the more that the establishment itself knows the chashivas of kashrus. And then when the mashgiach does find something wrong that's going on, he'll actually have the backing to be able to deal with it. So I do recommend always, even if it's a good hashgacha, even if it's a place that you know that you can eat it, right? Ask. It's always, it does not hurt whatsoever to ask for the mashgiach, talk to the mashgiach, bring them a cup about every little thing. That's where some mashgiachim get feel a little bit of resentment, but or express resentment a little bit, but it's for sure.
Does the Rav agree?
Yes.
On that note, we'd like to thank everybody for coming. Please continue to send in the questions so we can do more of this. If it's as people want it, I'll try to do it as much as we can.
Good talk.
Can we take more questions?
Yeah, why
should
not?
More questions? So loud, take questions out loud.
If anybody has questions, just ask them in the...